Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm glad they play on Saturday tonight. Coming to you live from the Quicken Loans studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans apply. Simply understand fully. Mortgage confidently. I want to talk about this G League thing in a second, and maybe Nick Bosa as well tied into that. But what I was saying about the Lakers and some of the early season NBA thoughts caught some of your attention, and you're on CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Austin in Jersey City. Austin, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, buddy. What's up?
What's up, Austin? How are you, man?
Hey, I'm pretty good, man. Thanks. I just have a bit of bone to pick with the whole notion, the perceptions around LeBron. And people use the term that he's polarizing. I think he's much more polarized. Where's the moral turpitude involved? He hasn't done anything bad in terms of like behavior. So this is more an external perception that's been placed on him. This whole idea, polarizing. What has he generated to be polarizing?
Yeah, I think he was polarizing in the sense that there was a lot of, people who hated him when he went to Miami, or were, saying he wasn't clutch when that false narrative was a thing. I don't think it so much exists now. I think he's just massive now. You have these people who are LeBron detractors because it's so rooted into their now DNA of how they watch and consume sports, because he's such a big part of sports that they couldn't let it go. But I think that's such a minority now, and I think the vast majority of people realize what we're recognizing, what we're watching, and are just kind of along for the ride. So I think it was Shep said that before. I think he was right at a time. I think now LeBron's not the most polarizing, just the biggest. Odell Beckham's kind of polarizing, where you're going to get a lot of division on how people feel about him. There's not much that with LeBron anymore. There might be arguments about how good the Lakers are going to be, but I don't think you get any more arguments about LeBron himself, his accomplishments, his merits off the court, any of that stuff. How about Jeremy in Fort Worth? Jeremy, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, brother. Love the show. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
Got two things real quick. One, back to the following players, not teams.
Sure.
I'm usually the person that doesn't agree with that, but I hate the Red Sox, but I'm rooting for them because of Moreland and Kinsler on the team. I'd like to see them get a World Series.
So you're a hypocrite.
I'm a hypocrite.
Okay.
But the real reason, I wanted to see what your thoughts were on Luka and Dennis Smith on the Mavericks and how you think that's actually going to play out.
I think it's going to be super fun. I have to watch more. I didn't see enough of Dennis Smith last year. Obviously, he has a lot of athleticism, some questionable efficiency issues. But I think I like on paper those two guys together. And I'm a Luka fan. There are a few questions about athleticism and all that stuff. But I think his natural court ability is blatantly obvious, right? And he's polished having played professionally. And I don't think you do what he did at a top league in the world like he did it and don't have that translate in some way, shape, or form. So I think he's got real, real even star potential, depending on how well he scores the basketball, how well he shoots the ball. But I think as a backcourt, I'd feel pretty good if I'm a Mavs fan about getting to watch those two guys come up together.
Yeah, we are excited. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Yeah, you got it. And speaking of being groomed and being ready to play, Luka is a good entryway into this conversation. Because we have all these problems with the NCAA. It always comes up. Who even knows what's going on with that recruiting scandal now? Does anybody know? I know there was Bill Self was involved. Nobody cares. Nobody cares because no one cares if the people did it. It's not about much of a scandal if people don't care at all about the basis of the scandal. If some kids got money, nobody cares because everybody realizes how broken the entire system is. And then you had what Nick Bosa had happened with him at Ohio State, where he's not going to Ohio State to get ready for the NFL draft. Now he's hurt. He wouldn't be ready to play. But think about this for a second. Think about this. Wouldn't you think the best place for somebody to rehab and get ready for the draft would be at a program like Ohio State? Shouldn't that be the case? But it's not, right? Clearly for him. And that's what I think is so fascinating about this NBA G League story, where the G League is going to be offering $125,000 salary for top-level high school prospects, basically the one-and-done guys, who instead of going to college for that 1 year to meet the age requirement to play in the NBA, can go to the G League, play professionally, get paid, sign with agents, sign shoe endorsement deals, and all that. And initially, I saw some of the blowback was, well, that's not going to stop them from going to Duke or Kentucky or a prestigious university like that, because what comes along with that, right? That your profile is raised if you go to Duke or Kentucky or UNC or, you know, one of those. You're playing in front of packed houses. You're playing in front of a national audience in big events, the NCAA tournament and everything. So there's that appeal. But if I was in their position, I would look strong and hard at this G League option. I really would. Because we have to eliminate the farce education aspect of it. Anybody who's going to a one and done is not going to college for the schooling part, right? That's something you could do. I recommend everyone educate themselves, college or not, right? But that's something you can do independently. That's something you could do later. That's something you can do on the side, especially when you're on NBA salary. There's a lot of conveniences that come along with having that kind of money. But nobody who's going to school for 1 year is going there for school. They're going there to spend the 1 year there to boost their draft status. And I know people will say you might get paid in school too, blah, 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 blah. But what you won't get is professional experience. So not only is, like, $125,000 a real salary. You know, I saw some of the WNBA women were a little miffed about it because it's more than they make. So that's like a real salary. And, again, if you're, let's say, Zion Williamson or somebody like that, you can start your marketing campaigns early. But most importantly, you can learn what it takes to be a professional. And I think that training could be more valuable than anything that happens 1 year in any school. It could be more valuable than playing under the big lights at the NCAA tournament. You know, there's something humbling about having to take some of those road trips or flights to Fort Wayne or someplace like that. But you learn how to follow schedules, how to blend in with the team, how to meet your responsibilities. And when I brought up Luka Doncic, I did that because he played professionally overseas. And a lot of these guys who have been playing overseas, the prospects from there, they're coming in very NBA ready. They're coming in very NBA ready because they already played professionally. At, you know, Porzingis was another one. Was super young, but everyone said when he got drafted, oh, he's a project. It's going to take a while. And I said at the time, no, it's not. He's playing professionally over there. He's going to be ready. He was ready. And I mean, plenty of these college guys come and succeed as well. So I'm not saying, I mean, both paths are valuable, but or viable, but I think it is valuable to get that professional experience. So I think that is an option, could be very intriguing, and I think people are looking at it too much in the now rather than what it could be. Because if some of these guys start going to the G League, doesn't then the G League become a thing that people are watching? If R.J. Barrett is playing Zion Williamson in a G League game, you think that's not getting televised? right? It is. So it would take a little bit of a transition. It would take a little bit of, a dam breaking, the dominoes falling, more than one guy doing it. But if that starts happening, then all of a sudden the G League becomes a thing. Because a lot of people, a lot of NBA fans will watch college basketball to evaluate the top prospects. They'll do the same thing with the G League, in a second. And then those guys themselves, the benefit for them is, all right, I'm marketable. Why don't I get my sneaker campaign going? Why don't I sign with an agent and see what else I can get? In the meantime, I'll be more ready for the NBA by playing a professional schedule, meeting those responsibilities, than doing whatever I want and just showing up to practice at school, because that's basically what it is there, ain't it? And, Luka Doncic is a good example because he was playing professionally, and I think he's ready for the NBA. His talent makes him ready for the NBA, but I think he's ready for the NBA from the jump as a result. And there are plenty of different ways to do things, but I think it's an intriguing possibility. And if I were in their position, which I am not, and never was, unfortunately. Things turned out okay, but it was never, it would have been nice to be a top NBA prospect. It'd be nice. But if I was in their position, I would strongly consider that new G League option. 855-212-4227 at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. I'll ask Stu Jackson, former NBA executive and coach, what he thinks about that coming up next, as well as some of my other early season NBA thoughts. It's the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It's the Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio. And I'm joined now by Stu Jackson, former NBA executive and coach. And Stu, before we go over some of the early season NBA storylines, I really wanted to get your thoughts, as I was just talking about it, on this new NBA G League deal where apparently some of the top prospects could get $125,000 and a chance to, I think maybe more importantly, play in a professional environment. Some of these European guys now, I think, are very ready for the NBA because they're playing professionally at such a young age. How successful do you think that will be, and how soon?
Well, it was interesting in that the announcement from the NBA came at a little bit of a surprise to many people in the basketball world. I don't think many people saw it coming, but the gist of it is that they are going to allow high school players to sign what they call select contracts. And they're eligible to sign those contracts when they turn 18 years of age. So, the implication is that, a high school player would be, as you mentioned, in a professional environment with a G League team. That G League team is affiliated with NBA teams. So the idea is that they would actually develop in an NBA-type system at a very early age. The downside is that many high school players turn 18 before their senior year in high school. So conceivably, you could have a high school junior, rising senior, sign one of these select contracts for a year and then sign another select contract, for another year before he's eligible actually for the draft. So that is both good and bad. It gives them a chance to develop in an NBA environment, but they actually forego a chance at a high school diploma, and I don't really like that. Now, the good thing is that I don't think it's going to involve a lot of players. It's not going to be some mass exodus of high school players into the G League. I think you're talking, anywhere from like 1 to 10 players per year.
You still there, Stu?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That looked like the phone had dropped off for a second.
No, sorry about that.
Gotcha. That's okay. I wanted to get your perspective on that, obviously, with all your experience in the game. Now, moving on to the early season in the NBA, let's start with a couple of things from last night before we get to what has been the big topic. The Raptors, to me, they're just as good as the Celtics, because you take a team that was excellent with some playoff failings and you add you know, a proven scorer like Kawhi and defender. Kawhi actually reminds me a lot of Kobe on the offensive side, the way he plays. And then Danny Green, who's been there and done that. That kind of alleviates some of their playoff failings, especially when you combine that with some of their younger guys on the come up. Do you think the Raptors are for real this season?
Without question, they're for real in my mind. And the Raptors are not getting a lot of conversation in terms of potentially coming out of the Eastern Conference. I think many of the pundits out there have sort of given the Eastern Conference championship to the Boston Celtics. I don't happen to subscribe to that for the reasons that you mentioned. One is, you know, Kawhi is a great player. He's not a good player. He's a great player. He's like a top 10 type all-star, maybe even top five. And a little bit better version probably of DeMar DeRozan, although DeRozan I think is going to fit nicely in San Antonio. But, you know, the strength of the Raptors is not just a guy like Kawhi. You forget that last year they had the second best bench in the NBA. They're young. They're still developing. They still have a lot of upside, and they're all playoff tested at this point. So I think the Raptors are a legitimate contender for the Eastern Conference. The one caution that, you know, I would have about the Raptors is I thought last season they really made some strides in terms of the way that they play. They changed their style of play to involve more ball movement, more player movement. And just watching them the first two games of this season, and understand it's early yet, but I see them gravitating back a little bit to more one-on-one basketball, utilizing, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry. And I just hope, for the Raptors' sake, that they continue to move the basketball, move players around, because in the playoffs, you're a little bit more difficult to defend instead of being just a one-on-one type team.
Robin Lundberg talking to Stu Jackson, former NBA executive and coach here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, before we get to LeBron and the Lakers, which is obviously a huge topic, is there anything that stood out to you from just a couple of games? For me, it might be the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, I knew Anthony Davis was a problem. Obviously, everybody should have at this point. But if that front court rotation with Mirotić and Julius Randle pans out the way it could, and Elfrid Payton is one of those young guys who winds up in a new environment and thrives there along with Holiday in the backcourt, maybe the Pelicans are a little bit better than I or other people realize.
Yeah, don't sleep on the Pelicans. And you hit it right on the head. You know, when they lost Boogie Cousins, you know, everybody thought it was a huge blow. And don't get me wrong, it is. I mean, Boogie Cousins is a great, great player. But if you look what they've done here over the past, 12 months, and adding a guy like Mirotić, Elfrid Payton, and then they get Julius Randle, those are three players that I think are as good a fit with Anthony Davis as you can get. Mirotić, who's averaged 30 now in his first two games, is a great perimeter shooter which spreads the floor. Elfrid Payton, you know, while he's not a great perimeter shooter, he needs space because he's an excellent penetrator, and he gets that with the likes of Mirotić or Anthony Davis, spreading the floor. And then you add Julius Randle. And listen, the thing about Julius Randle that I think is a big weapon for any team, and I think the Lakers are going to sorely miss this, he is a very good rebounder. But he's a rebounder on the defensive end. When he retrieves the basketball, he can push the basketball himself, and everybody can take off. I mean, it's not like he needs to necessarily always get the ball to a guard, and that's a very, very potent offensive weapon. And if you look at their numbers over the past two games, they're scoring a lot of points. And they're scoring a lot of points because they can do it outside, they can do it inside with Anthony Davis, they're great on the break, and they've improved a little bit defensively. Don't sleep on the New Orleans Pelicans. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they are a Western Conference team that actually has home court going into the playoffs this season, and then look out.
Now, to LeBron and the Lakers, did you make anything of that first game? I mean, to me, obviously, they got to shoot the ball a little bit better. I know that's been a weakness going in, but I don't think it's as bad as it was the other night. I was impressed by the pace that they played with. Anything that stands out to you, or any big picture thoughts that you have on that team?
Yeah, they're an interesting study, and everybody is doing just that because it's LeBron. And we've all been here before. LeBron has taken players of lesser talent and made them great, and I have no doubt that he'll do that with the Lakers as well. But, you know, the one thing you mentioned was the pace of the game. You understand when, you know, the dirty little secret is with LeBron is his teams, particularly in Cleveland, were very low pace, low possession teams. LeBron himself is not used to playing at this pace. And I suspect as we go along here into November and December, you know, the Lakers will settle at a pace that LeBron is A, comfortable with, and two, more takes advantage of possessions with where he has the ball in his hand. And that's where they're going to be most effective. The worry about the Lakers is, though, they don't have great perimeter shooting. They don't have great size. But what they do have is the greatest player in the world.
On the other side of that matchup tonight, are you in the camp that thinks Houston's going to take a step back or no?
I am totally entrenched in the camp that Houston will take a step back. They're not as good, okay? They're not as good, and I don't want to make too much of role players, but when you lose Luke Abahamute and Trevor Ariza, you lose two very good defending role players. And what the Houston Rockets were able to do before is put those two players on the floor along with P.J. Tucker, and they could stop teams at various points during the game because they're three great defenders. Add to the fact that Jeff Bezdelic, you know, under the radar move, decides to retire, who is their defensive, assistant coach, and he ran the defense, and it all spells trouble for me. And I worry about the Houston Rockets.
Stu, really appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Lots of stuff done on this here program. Lots of many things. What was your favorite part of the show so far, Shep?
I love the NBA talk, the interaction with the fans, and I think you give them a voice. And I think there's a lot of good banter. And the one thing that stands out, Robin, is every call is, I really enjoy the show, and you do a great job.
And why don't you say some more nice things about me?
I can keep going if you want. No, I love working on the show with you, Robin and Piano. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. Anthony, why don't you insult me to bring balance to the universe?
No, you also have done a terrific job today, Robin. Excellent show.
Let's fill the rest of the segment. Who would like to call and compliment me? 855-212-4227. Now, I was trying to talk about everything we had as so far, and we've, you know, we're almost 4 hours in now. That's a lot of things. But at this point of the show, I get to everything I have not in another one. What's up first, Anthony?
By the way, I enjoyed all the Odell Beckham Giants talk because as a Jets fan, I love seeing the Giants in disarray.
Yeah, you really
finally
love seeing,
for once. I mean, the shoe's on the other foot.
That's the same thing you brought up about the Yankees. Are you rooting for the Red Sox because you hate the Yankees and you like seeing the Giants in disarray? So you're just like an anti-fan. Who are your teams? Not the Giants and not the Yankees.
Exactly. All right, we'll start off with something that you mentioned at the top of the hour. Nick Bosa will not return to Ohio State after the injury and instead will focus on the NFL draft. Did Bosa make the right decision?
I think it was the only decision, right? What else is he supposed to do? Look, if he was risking injury to play, some people could call that admirable. Others would call it stupid. But this wasn't really a decision because he was not able to play. I mean, he's not ready physically to be back even for their playoff game. So what is he going to do? He's got to think about what's next for him. What stands out to me is that Ohio State's not the place for him to get ready for the pros, right? Like, even if he's not playing, you would think that a major college program like that would be the best place to get ready for the pros. But apparently that's not what his camp thinks, and that's not what a lot of guys think. So that to me is the most interesting part of it, that he's going, all right, I'm getting out of there and I'm looking forward to my pro career. But it's not much of a decision in general because of where he was at health-wise. It would be more of a decision if, you know, they said, hey, there's an 80% chance we could get you out on the field for the playoff game, but you'd be a little hobbled, but you still want to do it. Then he'd have to weigh, all right, do I want this moment of glory in college and camaraderie with my teammates, or do I want to make sure I'm healthy for my future pro career? At this point, he didn't have that choice, and he has to move on to the next phase. So that's why you see what he's doing.
So Manny Machado ignited the benches to clear after clipping Jesus Aguilar's leg in Game 4. Then he was accused of not hustling down the line in Game 2. Do you believe Machado is hurting his value as he enters his free agency?
No. No. I think he's hurting his reputation. I don't think he's hurting his value. You know, now Manny Machado, and I hadn't thought of him in these terms until this playoffs, really, is getting that reputation as a dirty player and the like. And that one play at first base, he clearly sort of tried to do a kick there. Not great, right? But if he's producing, then I don't think he's going to hurt his value whatsoever. You know, would Yankees fans say no to Manny Machado because of that? No way. And baseball, by the way, is the sport where it's least important. Like, where chemistry is least important, because you're playing an individual sport. It's just disguised as a team sport. Basically, where it comes into play is you're around the same guys all the time, so you don't want to, you know, if somebody really bothers you, that can hurt the overall morale, just like it would in any office. But your actions are not dependent upon another person's actions. You know, when you go up to bat, that's you and the pitcher. And on the defensive side, there's a little bit of communication and chemistry in baseball, but very little. That's almost individual as well. So as long as Manny Machado is producing, as long as he can play infield positions and hit like a slugger, then he's going to get paid on the open market. That's for darn sure.
Turning our attention to the NFL, Josh Rosen and the Cardinals struggled mightily on Thursday Night Football. The offensive coordinator got fired the very next day. People already questioning, however, whether or not Rosen's a bust. Are people overreacting a little much, Robin?
Maybe. Yeah. Look, I think Baker Mayfield, to me, of that rookie QB class, is clearly the guy who I think has the most like franchise QB potential. Sam Darnold has been better in recent weeks. But for the most part, those guys, none of them was, outside of Baker, was the, and maybe Darnold will move his way into that class. But I had been thinking of Darnold in terms of Allen and Rosen, where those kind of guys are available every single year. Maybe that winds up just being Rosen and Allen. I can't fully write him off because his situation is abominable. You know, I don't really watch the preseason in the NFL or too many other sports. But for some reason, I don't know why it was, I randomly turned on a Cardinals preseason game this year. And just blink test, I was like, my God, that team is awful. And as a result, I did not draft David Johnson in any fantasy drafts because the team was just too bad. And I bet against the Cardinals week one. I forget who they were playing, but it didn't matter. I would have bet against them regardless. I put money against the Cardinals in week one from that snapshot I got of the preseason. They're bad. And it's probably the worst situation in the NFL. I don't know if there's a worse team in the NFL. I think they're probably the worst team in the NFL. So I cannot fully write off a rookie QB who is being groomed under those circumstances without help. However, he has also not been particularly impressive. But let's see how he does with the new offensive coordinator. Let's see how he does with an improved situation before we totally write the career obituary for Josh Rosen 6 games in.
Some interesting names being mentioned as we near the NFL trade deadline, one of them being Derek Carr. How much is John Gruden to blame, Robin, for Carr's struggles this season?
Almost zero. Carr stunk last year. So, you know, like I can blame John Gruden for a lot of things. I can make fun of the fact that they gave him a 10-year contract. Oh, man. They gave John Gruden. Oh, yeah, I need a second. They gave John Gruden a 10-year contract and all that money. They're terrible. and traded Khalil Mack, and they're awful. But David Carr was bad last year too. So as much as it's easy to pile on John Gruden, I try to be fair. And I'll be fair here in this instance. Did I call him David Carr? I'm sorry, Derek Carr. I had David Carr on the mind because of how his career may have been ruined in an early situation, and we were just talking about Josh Rosen and his career possibly being ruined in an early situation. Derek Carr was not good a year ago either. He's just not throwing the ball downfield. Ever since that injury, he hasn't been the same player. He had that big year in 2016. He has not been the same since. So I don't think what's going on with Gruden and their lack of offensive ingenuity is helping him, but I'm also not going to put that on Gruden.
Bill Belichick isn't buying the Khalil Mack Lawrence Taylor comparison, are you?
They're different players. I mean, it's always difficult. Here's the thing with Lawrence Taylor. Like, Lawrence Taylor was a force and a true game changer. You know the book The Blind Side, right? And the movie that, you know, Sandra Bullock movie or whatever. But basically, the premise of The Blind Side was the left tackle position. And they told it through Michael Orr at the time and how the left tackle had become such a huge part of football. And because it protected the QB's blind side. That book begins with Joe Theismann getting cracked by, you know, the play that everybody knows, and Bill Walsh talking about Lawrence Taylor, you know, adapting to the Lawrence Taylors of the world with the West Coast offense. So Lawrence Taylor was the kind of player who changed the game with his ability. So you don't just put people into his class willy-nilly. At the same time, Khalil Mack is a game-changing type of guy. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's not only making plays defensively, but making game-changing defensive plays with strip sacks and the like. I got to wait a while before I'm putting people in the Lawrence Taylor class, but in the class that he's currently a part of right now, there's nobody better than Khalil Mack on the defensive side of the football, and that should be enough for the moment. You're talking about probably the best defensive player in the NFL.
Vontaze Burfict appears to have avoided a fine for his elbow to Antonio Brown's head in last week's game. Joe Thomas said this week that he should be suspended for the rest of the season. Other players have spoken out as well. Is Burfict dangerous, and do you think the NFL should think about banning him from the league?
Huh. I hadn't really thought about that extreme, but it's a dangerous sport, right? And you can't have people out there making it more dangerous. You know, he's a good player. And sometimes there's bang-bang plays that you can't always put on a guy. But he does now have a habit of these sort of plays. It's habitual. And if that's the case, yeah, you have to start throwing him out of games and then eventually, you know, consider throwing him out of the league if he cannot contain that. You know, I was talking to Marcellus Wiley, who was a friend of mine a couple days ago. He's promoting his new book, and he put it in a way I hadn't heard somebody else put it. He said he tells people, bring guys down like they're your son, right? Like, if you're playing in the yard, you don't try to send a message to your kid. You bring him down to the ground. You tackle him. And that's how defensive players need to start playing. They need to bring the guy down. They don't need to send a message, because that is the thought process from a bygone era. And Vontaze Burfict is bordering on dangerous out there in a game that's already dangerous. And the NFL needs to be careful, and he needs to be careful, or else, yeah, I mean, you will start hearing people talking about his career being in jeopardy as a result of the discipline that could come down.
And finally, no one won the latest Mega Millions drawing, meaning the jackpot now climbs to a staggering $1.6 billion. The next drawing will be on Tuesday. The estimated jackpot for that drawing would tie the largest lottery prize in U.S. history. It's been asked many times, but I've never asked you, Robin, so here we go. If you won, what would be the first thing that you bought with the money?
The first thing I would do is make a donation, I think, to be honest. With that much money, that's like an absurd amount of money. I'm not going to win because I don't buy lottery tickets. I kind of think the lottery is like a tax for dumb people. It's also sad. Like, I've been in places where I've seen, like, the line for lottery tickets and the poor people who were in the line for lottery tickets, and it just made me sad about the whole process. But I know everybody's excited because how big this number has gotten. How much money is it now again?
It's going to be $1.6 billion.
Yeah, the first thing I would do is make a series of charitable donations, no joke. Or donations. I would also make donations to people who I thought would make change across the country and the world that I think is positive. And then personally, what would I do after that? What would be my first? You see, I don't know, because I don't want money for material possessions. I want money for convenience and security, right? Like, it's nice to know, oh, you know, no one in my family's ever going to have to work if they don't want to. And I don't have to worry about finances ever again. And then it's also nice to be like, you know what? I feel like going to Belize. Let me take a private jet. Those are the reasons I want money. So, yeah, my first purchase would probably be some sort of vacation, some sort of extravagant. I don't even want to say extravagant. Luxurious? That's the same thing. Luxurious, extravagant vacation would be my first solo purchase after trying to make some, you know, good use of the money, because I don't deserve to have all that money. Nobody needs all that money. You know, once I get to, what's the difference between 100 million and 800 million? Is there a difference? What's it? You know, give me, I'll be good. I'll be good. So good luck to any of you guys out there playing the Mega Millions lottery. Man, that's nobody needs all that money. I'll be back here next week. In the meantime, you can get the podcast. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.